means to see it our way. I'm Dr. Ray.
This is full-time Catholic radio for Southeast Michigan, 990 WDEO, Ypsilanti, Detroit, or on the internet at WDEO.net.
Hudson, welcome to Church and Culture. This show is devoted to exploring the interaction between our faith and our culture. Each week, I will talk with expert guests on topics ranging from literature, art, and music to politics, liturgy, spirituality, and education. Thank you for joining us. Great privilege today to have the choir master of the Boys of St. Paul's Choir School, John Robinson, on the show, because today is not only the Feast of the Nativity of Our Blessed Virgin Mary, it's also the release date of the latest recording made by John and his choir at the St. Paul's Choir School. It's called Ave Maria. And it's the second recording made by John and his choir. The first, a Christmas CD called Christmas at Harvard Square, really became quite a phenomenon. John, welcome to Church and Culture, and tell us what happened after you made that recording. You were on the show to talk about that, but then it went crazy.
Good morning, Deal. Great to speak to you, and thank you for having me on. Yeah, it did. It did go crazy. It was very exciting indeed. It was kind of a roller coaster ride, and it was just so wonderful to be able to see this beautiful traditional church music making its way into so many homes across the country and beyond internationally as well, and to be able to chart its success was just wonderful. It was a great, great thing to do. And so now we couldn't be more excited to be able to release the follow-up recording to that, Ave Maria in Harvard Square, on this, as you say, the Feast of Our Lady's Nativity, which is just such a wonderful, auspicious way to celebrate that feast. And just everything seemed to align for a release date there. I think it must have been workings of the Holy Spirit that led to that. So we couldn't be more grateful for the way things have turned out.
Well, you brought back all the same team that made the first recording so successful. Tell our listeners a little bit about your team, because it's really quite extraordinary.
Well, So we were just blessed beyond belief to be able to work with Aim High Recordings and Monica Fitzgibbons and Kevin Fitzgibbons, who are just such incredible promoters of beautiful music in so many different ways. We know other recordings are extraordinary as well. And we were just incredibly fortunate to have them, because they lined everything up with world-class producers, just absolutely fantastic technicians at the recording. And they're just so sympathetic to our mission as a Catholic school and everything that we do and stand for, and so wonderfully helpful at promoting everything. So it just, everything aligned really well. And we had a very good group of boys coming through the choir that year as well, this year. And the men were sounding great, so it just everything made sense to make another recording.
Well, this is also the 50th anniversary year of St. Paul's Choir School in Cambridge on Harvard Square. And I noticed also that the pastor of the church there, of St. Paul's, Father William Kelly, himself was a choir boy student.
Exactly, yeah. That's another wonderful thing to have come full circle, that it's just great to have somebody who was part of the choir himself, of course, back in the 1970s under the legendary founder of the choir school, Theodore Marrier, who began the school in 1963. So we're just a little bit past our 50s at this point.
John, you're going to be legendary too one day. but I know you don't look forward to that, because you'll be gone. But you came to St. Paul's in 2010,
yes,
from England. You brought with you the great traditions of the choir schools in England. You've been, it seemed like, associated with all of them at one time or another, whether it's St. John's College, Cambridge, Carlisle, Hereford. I know I'm leaving some out. King's School. And tell our listeners what a choir school is. They may not really know. Yeah. It's not just boys getting together, you know, twice a week to rehearse.
No, it's a very rare thing, really. But where I come from in England, it's not rare. You know, there are many. It's very kind of you to say I've associated with many of them. But really, realistically, there are, I think, there are more than 40 in England that have been there right the way through from the very early years of the church in England. So some of them date back to the Dark Ages, literally. I mean, the choir in the King's School, Canterbury, for example, I think was there in the 7th century. So some of these places are really ancient. And as you say, they're not just a sort of place where boys gather after school, but really it's a school itself. So we teach academic subjects here at St. Paul's in Harvard Square, as well as all of the musical training that the choristers receive. They're also doing all of the usual academic subjects that would occur in a normal school, but then we have daily mass as well in the middle of the school day, which the boys go both attend and also sing at as well. The choir sings at the mass. So that's really the center of our day every day, and it's just a fantastic synthesis of education, music, and Catholic faith that creates...
John, I used to flunk my students for using the phrase Dark Ages, just so you know.
Thank you.
And I know you know why I did, because it wasn't dark at all.
Absolutely.
you have this incredible tradition. Are there any other choir schools in the United States?
St. Thomas Fifth Avenue is an Episcopalian one, but we're the only Catholic choir school in the United States, and we have been for quite a long time. I mean, I think back in the day there were more boys' choirs, because of course that was always the tradition in the church, but I don't think there were ever any actual schools other than St. Paul's. So we were...
God bless you for what you're doing. I mean, I was so excited to discover you and your work back when you did the Christmas album.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Now I'm very, very pleased to have you on the show on this day, on the day the CD is being released. And we should say to our listeners, there's all variety of places you can find it. You know, it'll be it is available, I'm sure, on iTunes and Amazon, but also at the Aim Higher website, and also at the St. Paul's Choir website. What is that website for our listeners?
That is stpaulschoirschool.us. So www.stpaulschoirschool.us. And that's a great place to get the recording from, actually, because not only can you help support the choir school by getting it from there, but also you can learn a little bit more about this unique school, which is one of the great reasons for making these recordings, just to make people more aware of this beautiful music and enterprise that's going on here in the United States.
Yeah, and one that I heartily recommend people support, and go to the website, buy the recording there, because I'm sure you guys will make more money that way. You won't have to share it with anybody.
Yep.
And I suppose we should start playing some music. I did want to, though, emphasize the great work you're doing and the great tradition there at the St. Paul's Choir School, and anybody who ever visits Boston should make a trip out to Harvard Yard, and most people do when they're touring Boston, go out and take a look there. You know, drop by the St. Paul's Church and for Mass and hear this marvelous choir. Do they sing every day of the week? John?
We sing Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Sunday.
That's okay. Well, almost every day of the week.
And, well, pretty much every day, exactly, yeah. It would be absolutely wonderful to see people coming through, and do say, come and say hello. We'd love to meet you.
Well, Anton Bruckner being one of my most favorite composers, but a lot of people don't know his choral music, which is absolutely wonderful. Would you tell our listeners about the Virga Jesu Floruit? I know I didn't pronounce that right, but there it is.
Virga, yes, I follow it. Yes, I would go a step further and say that his choral works are really the pinnacle, even though he was known as a great symphonist and wrote these marvelous symphonies, which are increasingly appreciated. I think his choral works are wonderful because they're the same sort of music as the symphonies, but more miniature. And this is a case in point, translating as "There shall a rod spring forth from Jesse." It's just a wonderful sort of miniature emotional portrayal of the wonder that springs from that text. And as you're hearing it, there's just a lot of variety, and it goes around some wonderful harmonic corners that keeps the listener listening all the time.
Well, we're going to listen to this, and we might add that Bruckner himself was a very, very religious man, was he not?
Absolutely, exactly, yeah. Yeah, himself an organist of St. Florestan's in Austria, and as well as a symphonist, his main work was teaching pupils, singing and composition, but playing the organ as well. And he was known as an improviser, a liturgical improviser at Mass, as somebody who's able to make music up on the spot really, really well.
Well, let's listen to the St. Paul's Choir School chorus singing this wonderful sacred motet by Anton Bruckner. We've just been listening to one track from the new recording by the St. Paul's Choir School, conducted and playing the organ with John Robinson, who's on the phone with me from Boston. And this is not only the feast day of Our Lady, it's the day that this wonderful new recording, Ave Maria, at Harvard Yard, has been released by AIM Higher Recordings. John, the next piece we're going to hear by Bach, Bis du bei mir, it's not actually by Bach, is it?
Well, it's funny you say that. There's quite a fascinating controversy surrounding this Dubheimer. It's in Bach's handwriting, copied at the back of his famous Anna Magdalena notebook, which was the piano book that many beginning pianists to this day start to learn Bach from. And it was dedicated to his wife, Anna Magdalena, who was a piano pupil, I suppose, of his at the time. And he wrote this piece in at the back of it because it was very popular, beautiful melody at the time. Abide with me to the end is the basic meaning of it. And, of course, it's being Bach, it's going to have been a religious sentiment to abide with me until the very end of my life, meaning our Lord abide with me. But also, because it's written in his wife's piano notebook, there's a sense in which it may have had a romantic connotation for her as well. But the fact is, he didn't write the tune. The tune was by Stolpert, who's an operatic composer of the day, of course, completely unknown now, known only for...
except for this.
...the tune that Bach copied out.
Well, the best steal from the best, right?
Exactly, exactly. That's what Bach did all the time. So, I mean, he was so good at taking things from different contexts and then making them, just changing the harmony a little bit here and there to make it better. So what we've got here is Bach's harmony and arrangement of it, but he probably didn't write the tune.
Well, let's listen to the choir of the St. Paul's Choir School sing what is in English, "When You Are Near, I Go With Joy." Let's listen. We just heard the choir of the St. Paul's Choir School, conducted by John Robinson, singing Bach's Bist du bei mir. Now, this next piece, John, is fairly famous for those who know the sacred choral tradition, the Pope Marcellus Mass by Palestrina. Is it true that he wrote it in order to prove that polyphony did not... how shall I put it, hide the words from the listeners?
Exactly right, really, yes. So it was conceived around the time of the Council of Trent, where the question arose about what the priorities were and what sort of music was permissible. And there was a movement amongst the cardinals to suggest that polyphony was not okay because of the way it was perceived to be masking the text of the ordinary of the Mass. Yeah, and making it confusing for the listener. So, and I think there's quite good evidence really to suggest this is completely true, that Palestrina at that point wrote this movement for Papa Martelli, and it was, I think, the whole Mass, in fact. Pope Marcellus, of course, was the Pope at the time, and the point was to prove that polyphony can not only doesn't muddy the words, but actually can elevate the text as well and make it clearer for the listener, and something that's more beautiful. And I think the consensus was that he was so successful at doing this.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Council. And it's really interesting that the German composer, 19th century composer, Hans Pfitzner, wrote an entire opera called Palestrina dedicated to this story.
Oh, fascinating. I didn't know that. Right.
Well, I mean, I'm a fan of Fritz Wunderlich, and he starred in it. He sang the title role. Yeah. That's what sucked me into it. But anyway, we want to listen to your choir at the St. Paul School sing what is really one of the most famous pieces of Renaissance polyphony, and this is the opening Kyrie, I believe, to Palestrina's Pope Marcellus Mass. Let's listen. Wonderful. That was the Kyrie from the famous Pope Marcellus Mass by Palestrina. And John Robinson, you could certainly hear in that recording, as in the others, but especially that, how wonderful the quality of this recording really is.
It is. We were just so lucky to be able to work with Aim High Recordings, and they engaged just the most wonderful production team. And Chris Alder, the producer, is incredibly experienced and has worked on so many other great recording projects. So it was just a dream to be able to work with people like that. And the attention to detail they have with the sound, Monica Fitzgibbons, is just great ear at listening to recordings and hearing how it should be done. And we were able to really capture the live sound that St. Paul's has, which is a very special acoustic, which we have a very beautiful barrel vault feeling, which helps focus the choir's sound very well.
I noticed that the motto of your choir is, "My mouth be filled with thy praise." You certainly seem to fulfill your motto pretty well.
I hope so.
And I wanted our listeners to be reminded of the website, because there is another St. Paul's Choir School in the UK, and I didn't want them to get mixed
right.
up. So this is St. Exactly. Paul, and that's spelled out, St. Paul's.
Exactly, yeah.
No apostrophes, just St. Paul's Choir School .us. St. Paul's Choir School .us. You can go there and not only learn about the choir school, but purchase this beautiful new recording, Ave Maria. Is it on or at Harvard Yard?
Oh, it's actually Ave Maria in Harvard Square is the name of the...
Sorry, I'm an old academic.
Yeah.
I think of Harvard Yard.
exactly.
On Harvard Square. And right. I strongly recommend to our listeners that you get this recording as a way of celebrating the feast day of Our Lady. And when we come back after a short break, we're going to hear three more tracks, one of which may be one of the most beautiful pieces of choral music ever written by the composer Sergei Rachmaninoff, who himself thought of this piece of sacred music as one of the most beautiful things he had ever written. We'll be back after a short break with John Robinson and more from their new CD, Ave Maria, after a short break.
Hello, I'm Father John Esradi from Miles Christi Religious Order. I would like to invite you to join us for a gala on Friday, September 29th, at the Lion Oaks Golf Club in Wrexham. You'll have a chance to learn more about the mission of Miles Christi and hear a presentation by President and Chief Counsel of the Thomas More Law Center, Richard Thompson. Proceeds will help us continue our apostolic work in Southeast Michigan. To learn more, go to mileschristi.org/activities. That is mileschristi.org/activities.
It's time for Family Man with Dr. Gregory Popchak.
Do you know the best way to get kids to obey? Remain calm. In the words of St. John Bosco, quote, show your children that uncontrolled emotion plays no part in your actions. They will respect you for that, and their respect will prompt their obedience, end quote. It turns out research agrees. In fact, studies show that the louder you yell, the less kids listen to what you say, and the more they just treat you like you're crazy. That might cause kids to keep their heads down around you, but it won't help them learn from you. Remaining calm helps you become the parent your kids want to learn from instead of just avoid. Need help developing calm discipline strategies? Check out Parenting with Grace, the Catholic parent guide to raising almost perfect kids. I'm Dr. Greg Popchak, but you can call me Family Man.
To discover more ways faith can enrich your life, visit CatholicCounselors.com.
Ever thought you'd make a bundle by trading in or selling your used vehicle only to find out it's worth a dinner for two? Well, it's much more valuable to donate your vehicle to Ave Maria Radio. Thousands of Americans donate their vehicle each year. The donation to Ave Maria is easy, tax-deductible, and supports our efforts to evangelize. A year from now, will you remember that dinner or your gracious and selfless donation? Go to AveMariaRadio.net to find out more. That's AveMariaRadio.net.
I am back with John Robinson, who is the choir master of the St. Paul's Choir School in Boston. St. Paul's Church sits on Harvard Square and has one of two choir schools in the nation, and it's the only Catholic one. About a year ago when you released the Christmas music on Harvard Square CD?
Exactly. Thanks for having me on, Bill. It's such a pleasure to be on your show. But yes, it was exactly a year ago that actually, I think it was two years ago that Christmas in Harvard Square came out, which is our first one. And so we're able to just, everything's aligned so beautifully this time to be able to release a Marian music recording on Our Lady's birthday. So it's a great pleasure to be able to do that.
Well, and speaking of that, we want to listen to some more of the wonderful music on this recording. I don't call CD anymore because so many people download or stream or, you know, listen to recordings in other ways. Now we even have vinyl is coming back. But this one I'm particularly happy with because Antonín Dvořák was born on this day. It's his birthday.
I didn't know that. That's wonderful.
And this is to the it's to Trinitatis Unitas, the unity of the Trinity, I suppose.
Yeah.
And this is by Dvorak, a Czech composer who himself wrote a lot of sacred music and spent a lot of time in the United States. It inspired his famous Ninth Symphony. But he wrote very beautiful choral music. His Requiem is among really one of the masterpieces of sacred music. Wouldn't you agree, John?
Absolutely, yes, yes. Just a wonderful melodist, and as you say, a Czech composer who became very well known for his touring in the United States and the New World Symphony you mentioned. And yes, the choral music is just beautiful. Stabat Mater, his other great piece, and the Mass in D also very lovely. So this piece for unison voices is a lovely melody. It's just very, very.
So this is a monophonic piece.
It is, yes, exactly. Yeah, which is the original way he wrote it. It's been turned into a four-part piece by editors wanting to sell more copies later in the history of time. He wrote it as a unison piece.
Well, let's listen to it. Now, monophonic means you're going to hear one continuous stream of melody. You're not going to hear intersecting polyphonic parts. Let's listen to the choir, the St. Paul's Choir School, sing to Trinitatis Unitas by Antonín Dvořák on his birthday. was a real treat. That was a monophonic setting of Du Trinitatis Unitas by Antonín Dvořák on his birthday. Tell our listeners what trebles are.
Treble refers to the highest voices in the choir, but in this case, particularly historically as well, the boy treble. So the pitch range of the soprano part, that's the highest one in the choir. And they've been called many different things through the history of music. They were called means at one point in the late medieval period. I suppose became known as treble later in probably 18th century onwards, I would think. And now, you know, soprano, treble, kind of interchangeable, but the high boys' voices that you're hearing there on that recording.
How many trebles sang in that recording?
20. So the size of the church and of the choir loft and things like that means that 20 is a really good number for us to make a really good band in St. Paul. So that's the number that we normally sing with.
You know, and as you know, John, in the Baroque period, people were so sort of stuck on the treble sound that men underwent castration to keep their voices high.
Exactly, that's right, yeah.
High price to pay.
Yes, I think there's one recording that still exists from the very early 20th century, the last of the Castrati, but yes, not something that...
Well, you don't suggest that for your boys, do you?
I would recommend not that, yeah.
Okay. Well, we come now to what I think is one of the most beautiful sacred pieces ever written. Sergei Rachmaninoff wrote his All-Night Vigil, and it was performed in 1915, and this particular section is the Ave Maria, but I suppose in the Slavic tradition, it begins a little bit different. It doesn't begin Hail Mary, does it?
Right. It doesn't. No, you're right. It begins Rejoice, O Virgin Mother. So, Bogorodice Dieva is the Church of the Slavonic at the start there, but then continues very much like...
Yes, then it goes right into the Ave Maria as we know it. And this is lovely. What do you want to tell us about that before we listen to it?
I think just to say that it was one of my Rachmaninoff's absolute favorite of his own pieces, and I think he said somewhere that he wanted it to be performed at his own funeral. I don't know whether that happened or not, but I think it was something that was said, and that it's from this great all-night vigil that you mentioned, and it certainly taps into the sonority that the Russian choral tradition has, of very low singers. So many of the bass voices go extremely low in the Russian tradition, and it underpins the sound with this wonderful sort of thick, velvety kind of sound that you hear in his piano writing too. You know, when you listen to the piano concerti and the Etude Tableau and things like that, there's always this great bass line that's there, and I think that comes partly from the awareness of the low.
How old are your bass singers in the choir?
They are adult men, so they some of them do have low voices like that. And this piece, in fact, doesn't have too many. It doesn't have the bottom Cs that some pieces in the All Night Vigil have, but it has some low Fs, I think, which are we do need to find low resonant voices to be able to sing that.
Well, we just tested the trebles in the Dvorak piece. Now we're going to test your basses in the Rachmaninoff. Let's listen to the Hail Mary by Sergei Rachmaninoff.
Thank you.
That was Sergei Rachmaninoff's Ave Maria from his All Night Vigil, 1915. And I must say, John Robinson, that your basses acquit themselves very well.
I'm glad to hear. I think I agree with you. I think there's some very nice, warm, rich sounds down there.
Beautiful sounds. And, you know, speaking of composers wanting their own compositions performed at their own funerals, in the next piece, Fauré's, from Fauré's Requiem, it was performed at his death. And, you know, the Fauré Requiem holds a very very special place in my own heart, and it's so beautiful, as are several of the French Requiems. I'm thinking of the one by Durafle, of course. Some people criticize this Requiem for being overly sweet. In fact, Fauré himself called it a lullaby, or referred to it as a lullaby of death. What do you think of music like this that is so direct, so emotional, just touches people instantly, regardless of whether they're familiar with it or not?
Exactly. I think it's extremely powerful and extremely good evangelism as well, because it's so immediate, as you say. It leaps right out from the recording, or from if you go and listen to it, to the listener, and I think it touches people very immediately, and it can be a great way to bring people into the church as well when they hear music like this, and then start to ask questions more about where it came from and its original inspiration and the context behind it all. And this is just such a piece as that. So, I mean, I think the sweetness of it that you mentioned is part of its whole palette of emotions that the Requiem goes through. I think light is one of the great themes of the Fauré Requiem, and it comes across here as well. When the word Luke, whenever that comes in the Requiem, is musically a very special moment, and he clearly was thinking of the Luke Eterna, the eternal light into which the soul comes, is just a very powerful motive in the Fauré's Requiem.
You know, I want to mention that I've long lamented the fact that so few composers in the last 20 or 30 years were willing to write such direct and beautiful pieces, but you have a composer right around the corner from you in Boston, Carsten Kuhman, who is
very
not
true.
One of those. He writes very beautiful music, which has a direct impact on the listener.
Exactly. Yeah, and very prolific. Carsten's written a huge amount of wonderful music, and something that people should certainly listen to.
Well, prolific hardly fits the bill with him. He's got 1,500 recordings available already, and I don't know if he's reached 40 yet. I'm sorry, though, you didn't record the Piazza. Do you ever perform the Piazza part of the Requiem?
We sing the whole Requiem every year, in fact. So people on All Souls Day, so November 2nd, if anybody is in Boston, will be a great time to come to St. Paul's and hear Fauré's Requiem complete, including the famous Piazza and the In Paradisum, which is on this recording. But the In Paradisum is one of our absolute favourite movements, which is why we recorded it. And it's just the end of it, this moment before anybody moves, which is just such an inspired moment, and we love that prayerful moment every year.
Well, I will say the In Paradisum is my second most favourite part of the Requiem. The Piazza, as our listeners may know, is distinguished by the fact that it has a solo part, which was originally sung by treble, because women singers weren't allowed in the church in the late 19th century France. But the recording by soprano Victoria de los Angeles is one of the great recordings ever made. I'm sure you're familiar with that, John.
Yeah, golden. Yeah, wonderful.
Okay, absolutely perfect. So let's listen to your choir, and once again reminding our listeners, and I'm talking to John Robinson, who is the choir master of the St. Paul's Choir School, and this recording called Ave Maria on Harvard Square is being released today by AIM Higher Recordings, and can be purchased anywhere you can purchase music, but we prefer you go to the stpaulschoirschool.us, and that spell out Saint, to buy this recording and download it or send off for the compact disc. Let's listen to Gabriel Fauré from his Requiem, In Paradiso.
Thank you.
get more beautiful than that. That was from Gabriel Fauré's Requiem in Paradisum. And I should emphasize, which I haven't, that John Robinson is not only leading the choir, he's playing the organ.
Not completely. It's actually Jeremy Bruns is the organist.
Ah.
He's the assistant director of music here and a fantastic player, just absolutely wonderful, glorious. But I just direct the choir and while he plays. So that's the way that works.
Sorry about that. Now, what's his name again? I don't want to.
Jeremy Bruns.
Now, is he also from England?
No, he's very experienced here in America, actually, and has played for many different choirs before working here.
Well, tell Jeremy he did a great job.
I will do so.
And sorry for that. I have time for one more, and I wasn't familiar with it, but I noticed when looking it up that it's part of the repertoire of a lot of choirs, especially in England. Jean-François Lalouette, O Mysterium Ineffabile, O Ineffable Mystery. You must have gotten to know this while you were at St. John's.
I think I didn't actually hear it there. I realized afterwards that I think they recorded it a few years ago with one of their boys. But I got to know it, I think, here in Boston, actually. I think it was in the library here. And it's just a beautiful Eucharistic devotional piece.
It's a Baroque piece, and let's listen to it before we run out of time. O Ineffable Mystery. Mystery by the Baroque composer Jean-François Lalouette. We've been feasting our ears on the new recording by the Boys of St. Paul's Choir School. Their new CD, Ave Maria, on the Feast of Our Lady, has been launched today, and it is available anywhere you can buy music, but we ask you to go to the stpaulchoirschool.usa website. It helps to benefit the apostolic work, the unique apostolic work of this Catholic choir school. John Robinson, choir master there, thank you for being my guest once again on Church and Culture, and good luck with this recording.
Thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure to talk to you, Bill. Thank you.
I wait and hope that it will take off, just like your previous recording at Christmas at Harvard Square. Thank you again for being on the show.
Thank you.
To all of you listening, there'll be a short break, and I'll be back with another wonderful guest.
With the extreme social and family values changes we as Catholics are facing, it's critical we bring awareness to our youth about the importance of continuing a Catholic education. The Knights of Columbus of St. Patrick's in Brighton bring you the third annual Catholic College Night, September 20th at Madonna University. Speak with representatives to gain a better understanding of the benefits of attending a Catholic college or university. To learn more, go to CatholicCollegeNight.org. That's CatholicCollegeNight.org.
When we talk about music and education, there's some research that has been done to show that music in various ways can improve your IQ. Dr. Frances Rauscher, behavioral psychologist, she did this experiment where she took university students and played different music for them and then tested their IQ to see if the music could affect their performance on IQ test. And she would play the music and then test them. And she found that after listening to the double piano concertos, the students would score 10% or so increase.
This is Henry Root, your host for Putting on the Mind of Christ. On our program this week, Andrew Pudor returns with two talks from the Michigan Catholic Home Educators Conference. On the first, he discusses the importance of music education on brain growth. We follow that with highlights from his writing seminar. Join us for Putting on the Mind of Christ this Sunday afternoon at 3, encoring Saturday afternoons at 6 on 990 WDEL, 1440 WMAX, and AveMariaRadio.net on the Internet.
If you've enjoyed Father John Ricardo's gift of teaching and preaching in the past, his new book, Heaven Starts Now, is the book for you. In his inspiring and incisive way, Father John addresses the obstacles we all face in becoming mature disciples. How do we learn to forgive? How do we combat fear and understand suffering? How do we worship the Lord, love others, and surrender our lives to God? How do we become saints day by day? Order online at AveMariaRadio.net under the store tab. That's AveMariaRadio.net under the store tab.
Here's a family minute with child psychologist Dr. Ray Guarendi from Ave Maria Radio.
Are you a controlling parent? In some ways, I hope you are. We have made parents feel that discipline is a dirty word. Who's we? Me, the experts. Those of us who have no shortage of theories on how you should be raising your child according to our specifications. And in so doing, we have convinced you that discipline, control, authority, high expectations and standards, you're treading on soft psychological ground there, you see, because authority and control are old terms, negative terms. They shouldn't be part of parenthood anymore. A good parent knows how to reason and discuss and talk with the child. Well, unfortunately, or maybe fortunately, reality always wins. And control is not a bad word, especially in those areas where control is needed. There is nothing wrong with being able to firmly guide a child's behavior in a certain direction because you are the parent and you know better. So is control and discipline and authority bad words? I really don't think so. And you know, I don't know if God thinks so either. I'm Dr. Ray.
On the next Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo.
We'll keep you closely connected to the faith with the latest from Rome, the front lines of the pro-life movement, and we'll also take a look at other crucial issues facing you and your family in our one Holy Catholic.